This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookseller. Publishers Weekly calls Get Scrappy a helpful digital marketing Bible. You can read the first chapter, get special digital extras, and learn more now at GetScrappyBook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Carrie O'Shea Gorgone. Carrie is a lawyer, podcaster, speaker, and writer. By day, she designs training programs for marketing professionals in her role as Director of Product Strategy Training at Marketing Profs. By night and on weekends, Carrie writes for some of the most authoritative sites in the marketing and PR industry, including Mark Schaefer's Grow Blog, Social Media Explorer, Entrepreneur, Spin Sucks, and MacCollier.com, and also contributes to Huffington Post. Carrie hosts the Marketing Profs weekly interview series, Marketing Smarts, named by Fast Company as one of the best business podcasts on the internet and one of 19 podcasts worth more than an MBA by Inc. The show features industry stars and authors like Chris Brogan, Anne Handley, Gary Vaynerchuk, as well as business personalities like John Taffer of Bar Rescue and actress Jane Seymour. She's also interviewed C-suite executives from organizations like IBM, National Geographic, Dell, and the Baltimore Ravens. Learn more about her at CarrieGorgone.com or by continuing to listen to this podcast. Carrie, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you, Nick. You know, that might be the first time I've ever heard you say that anything sucks because you had to read Spin Sucks in my bio.
Well, to be fair, it's not because Jenny Dietrich was on the podcast. So there, I had to say Spin Sucks constantly. But Spin may suck. Jenny does not. Neither does Carrie. Thank you so much for joining us here this week on the podcast. How does this week find you?
This week finds me in Orlando, where it's about 80 something degrees right now. So I can't complain. I have to say things are okay.
It is not that in Iowa.
No. What is it? It's frigid. I like to start podcasts off talking about the weather.
The weather, especially like a week or two after, you know, that's really, it's something that few do for whatever reason. So no, it is cold and blustery here. So we'll just all dream of Orlando where you are. I'm also, in reading that bio, intimidated by your podcast wizardry, your 19 podcasts worth more than an MBA, top podcast from Fast Company. So many great honors, and I am honored to have you here on our little old podcast. It has been a big week of Carrie and Nick conversations because you also did that other thing that you so often do me the favor of doing, which is dropping by my social media marketing class at the University of Iowa, dropping your legal expertise and wisdom upon them.
Well, that's always fun. I used to teach college, and I miss it sometimes because you never know what those guys are going to say.
I tell you what, you know, one of the things that they consistently say, and we had our interview the other night in class, and I played the interview for the other section of class as well. I didn't, and I felt like it was would have been bad to ask you to do a repeat the same week, so I recorded it and played that. But every time I ask after the fact, what was, you know, is there any like jaw dropping things that you're really surprised by as a result of all of this legal discussion? And the surprising fact that so many remember and really speaks to them is to not do Google image searches for their blog content.
Nick, I'm so happy to hear you say that, because that's the one thing I wish more businesses would take away. It's like the simplest way to prevent thousands of dollars of costly mistakes.
It is. And, you know, I think sometimes us content creators have our heads down in our own world so much. I think your opinion is absolutely correct. It's great that they're hearing that. I always find myself thinking, oh my God, how do more people not know that? That is, that's horrifying to me. I always think, I don't need to go back and tell them this, do I? But,
you do that, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I would
do.
I would say so. So, not to totally make you, especially after saying I didn't have you come back for a repeat of the same class, but one of the big things we talk about, because you are a lawyer and a marketer, and I am only a marketer, so missing that legal expertise, what are some of the bigger legal issues that brands are having to grapple with in the social and digital age?
Man, well, copyright is huge from a couple of different standpoints. One of which is when you're creating your own content, you have to decide as a business the extent to which you're going to enforce that copyright. You know, like I've said before to your students, I think if you're in the business of doing anything other than selling photos or videos, you shouldn't get too fussy about people sharing photos and videos that you post on your blog, like as a company, things about your brand or your products or, you know, your community efforts and stuff. I would be like pretty liberal as far as letting people go ahead and use those. I wouldn't make a big fuss about it from the corporate standpoint, because I just don't think you should burn like your biggest fans. Do you find businesses do that? Like they want to come down really hard on people for making, you know, the company logo like their avatar on Facebook or something because they just love you that much?
I know. And it's like this odd duality, because at one, to a certain extent, you want your brand to mean something to people and to, yes, have them do whatever they want. But I think we have that duality from a legal perspective, but also kind of the history in the branding world of kind of the negative stereotype that we sometimes live up to of being the brand police. And
totally.
That we're going to come after people. And yeah, if you've got the logo on your avatar, that can't be there.
Well, there's a couple different things, though, right? Because so if it's copyright, I'm saying you can afford to be a little gracious about it. If it's trademark, like real genuine trademark confusion, or if people start using your brand name as like a generic term, then you do have to worry about it. And it's not even you being a jerk. It's like you have to worry about it.
Well, now that's a real good point. And I think because probably more of our listeners are marketers than lawyers, even though who knows, maybe I have a big legal listenership out there that I'm unaware of. But let's assume I don't. And you talk about copyright versus trademark. What is the for dummies, I'm riding up a floor in an elevator with you? What's the quick, Carrie, what's the difference between those?
So copyright is for protecting creative works. So think about longer stuff like papers, essays, art, sculpture, songs, stuff like that. Okay, that's copyright. On the other side of things, you have trademark, which is only to protect your commercial logo, your like short trademark phrase, stuff like that, really short stuff. And only in the context of people associating that logo or phrase with what you do or what you sell. So it's like a much narrower type of protection.
So my other section that you did not speak to live and in person, that was on Wednesday of this past week. And in that time, Facebook had come out with their stories feature. And because we were in a legal mindset in class, someone, you know, they talked about that that's ripping Snapchat off. And someone said, well, can't you protect that? Can't you trademark or copyright the story concept?
That's so interesting.
Yeah. And
you were like, I don't know. But the answer is typically no. Like, you can't protect an idea, right? Even for copyright protection, which is pretty easy to get, you have to actually express the idea in writing, in sculpture, in a song, right? If you're talking about this is even harder because, like, the idea for stories, which is what, just like a live post.
Yeah, that disappears. It's a photo or video that you can edit, and then it disappears after a set amount of time.
Right. So that's difficult. For one thing, from a copyright standpoint, there isn't any, because that's not a creative expression. You might be able to patent it. You know, you can patent inventions and processes and stuff like that. But that's like, it can't be an obvious kind of thing. If you want to protect something with a patent, it can't be like pointing a laser pointer at the wall to distract my cat. It is a process by which I entertain my pets. Like, obvious things can't be patented. So I wonder if at this point, I don't know if it would be possible.
Well, that's
to patent something so simple.
That was my answer was much less eloquent, but I said I don't think so, because it seems like, not unlike the string entertaining the cat. I mean, and just like a photograph itself is not something that you can protect. And I feel like a story is only this little much more complex than a photograph or a video, neither of which are protected formats.
You can protect an individual photo, sure, like through copyright. Like, I could stand right next to you. We could take the same photo basically at the same time of the same thing. And we'll each own copyright in our own photo with, you know, there'll be minor differences. But when you're talking about a format, a whole channel or medium for delivery, I mean, that's something else altogether. Like, you could maybe have a patent on the software, or you could copyright software, but it's like you're less concerned with the creative expression of the code than you are with how it works. So usually that's like a patent situation, but I don't know about that. At this point, I would say it's so pervasive and how they're doing it. There's so many ways to do it. It's very unlikely that the mechanism they're using is identical, like, anyway. And I don't think, I don't know, man. It's like, how many thousands of dollars do you want to spend as a business protecting your patents, you know, on stuff that it's probably a million holes in your patent anyways?
Well, and I mean, Snapchat, it's not like they're some small little entity themselves, but jeepers. I mean, why would you, I mean, going up against someone like Facebook on that, I mean, they can just afford to bleed you on something like that. I mean,
yeah,
it can't
be
worth the time or the money.
Why try to chase down a bunch of people with lawsuits when you could just instead be working to make your stuff better, build your community? Because the only reason anybody goes to a particular business anymore is because they feel a personal emotional connection to that business. They feel like they're part of a community. So that's what you need to be thinking about and working on.
So it almost seems like there is a healthy legal mindset that you are encouraging, which, not to malign your profession, could seem surprising to some for a lawyer to say, you don't need to always worry about that as much. So what is the right way to think about your brand and what you should protect?
You need to protect, obviously, employee privacy. That would be a big thing. You remember the whole Cracker Barrel
Brad's wife thing.
Brad's wife, yeah. I really felt for Cracker Barrel in that situation, because they have a legal duty to protect their employees' privacy, or even their former employees, by not talking about, like, why they fired Brad's wife. And so then all these people are all over them on social media, like, why'd you fire Brad's wife? The biscuits were better when Brad's wife worked here. And like, they really can't say anything, but they have to protect employees' rights. Like, just the same way that companies have to be really careful with protecting customer data. Like, there's certain things you have to be super careful about, or you're going to get burned really badly. So those are things to worry about for sure. And then copyright, respecting, this is going to seem really odd because I just said, like, I wouldn't worry so very much about my own if I was not selling, like, photos and videos and stuff. If I was selling a product, I would let people use photos of it, no problem. But you're a content marketer, let's say, at a brand. You need to be real careful about other people's copyrights. That's the kind of stuff that gets you burned.
And other people's copyrights, as in you are pulling something from another source and including in your brand's copy?
Yes, exactly.
And what about the, I suppose, the converse of that, if someone else is grabbing your copy and posting it, or your content and posting it elsewhere?
Yeah, it's one thing in my view if they're just ripping you off all the time, like if they're a competitor, they're taking your content, something like that. I would definitely go after that person. I would police my copyright then. If it's a fan who means to share your stuff and they're just kind of inartful about it, then like they copy and paste more of it in their Facebook posts than, you know, you might ideally like, that's a different situation. I might privately reach out to them and be like, you know, it would be really helpful to us if you could share a link instead of this, because, you know, we super appreciate that you love us, but if you could send some of these folks like our way, that would be better for us than you copy pasting our post. Like, there are two different types of people. People who steal on purpose because they don't want to do the work themselves, or then people who take your stuff and they don't necessarily mean to steal. Like, they might genuinely mean to share and get you more exposure, but they're just inartful about it. I put them in two different categories.
I like that they're inartful about it. That's a very polite way to wag the finger at them.
I'm from Boston. We're so polite.
I was going to say, yeah, that's a decidedly, that's more of an Orlando way of looking at it, with being unartful as opposed to Boston. So in thinking about all of the trends that we see around live content, around video content, does this surface new concerns from a legal perspective that brand builders should be thinking of, should be aware of?
It absolutely does. I don't know if they're new concerns, but they're more immediate concerns. So like what we were just talking about as far as copyright, you know, if you pull out your mobile phone as an employee of a company and think, oh, my gosh, something cool is happening, I'm going to live stream it, and you're not paying attention to what's happening in the background, there could be copyrighted material showing on a TV. There could be like a concert and you can hear it, or a live performance happening, or a sporting event, right? Like sporting events, especially, venues are really careful about live streaming from sporting events, because a lot of times sponsors pay big money for the right to simulcast that event, and they don't want other people live streaming sporting events. So it's like, you definitely need to be thinking about what's in the background of what you're doing. Even if you're in your own office at the company itself live streaming, like, what's in the background there? Are there trade secrets up on a whiteboard because you're having a client meeting? Is there, you know, people's laptop screens are up? There's just all kinds of stuff you need to worry about. Are there job candidates walking by, like, right, get in trouble? You know, you're not thinking because you're looking at it on this tiny screen, not realizing that people on the other side could be watching on a high resolution computer monitor.
Well, and I also think, you know, as us marketers use it and have fun with it, that's one thing. But then I wonder about what happens, because we're not always the most proactive when it comes to internal social media policy, governance, and education of employees on things social, when your employees start going live from the middle of your workplace, and is that something that companies are going to need to be thinking about? Are there grounds to be able to tell employees when they can and can't go live or broadcast?
Yeah, so it's funny. So I think about this two ways. On the one hand, I feel like the only social media policy you super need is don't be a jerk. But maybe that's because I have a good understanding of what's jerky, you know, like, don't live stream right outside the ladies' room, like, that's jerky. Or, you know, don't walk into a job interview and start live streaming that. I mean, but those are pretty far out examples. The other kinds of things that companies need to be thinking about with employees is maybe having, you know, safe zones. Like, you can live stream in this area, like no problem, but don't come over here into maybe where the recruiting happens or any disciplinary stuff happens or any proprietary, you know, client stuff is displayed. Like just say this is not, you know, someplace that you can live stream, but you could even have, it doesn't have to be a studio, right? But it could be, you know, a dedicated space, which you purposely sanitize, like make sure there's nothing objectionable, stick to hotel art, I don't know, whatever. And then be like, you know, if you want to come and do like confessionals during the day, like be my guest, this is your area. And then think too about whether you want to encourage that or not, because if you're like in the biotech industry and your entire company relies on trade secrets and patents, you know, to a point, but up until you can patent it, you kind of need to keep things under wraps. Maybe you don't want people live streaming, period, because there's a very good chance that they're going to pick up a snippet of conversation or something that could compromise your business. So like certain businesses, you might just have to say no, but a lot of other businesses that don't rely on secrecy, it can be good to have the face of your employees out there so people make an emotional connection. So I think you should encourage it as possible.
Well, I love that idea of having a dedicated space potentially as well. And that gives me a good segue into pointing out that when I was at my son's high school, they have a dedicated podcasting space for students with equipment.
No, they don't.
They do. Amazing. They totally do. I don't think they use it as much as they'd like to, but they have a space to use it. I should go record my show from their studio, but...
You should be doing it there right now.
I should be. I'm too lazy. Oh. But and it does make me think, we talk about live streaming and video and the newest forms of content. And here we have podcasting still lumbering along, still being as powerful a medium as ever. It's funny because it's never been like hockey stick growth. But it's funny because I love, it's bad, but when you do what we do and you have familiarity with numbers and data, it can be fun to use our knowledge against people. And I love pointing out that podcasting never really went anywhere. The growth hasn't always been as fast as people have thought about or thought maybe it should be, but it is continues to be such a powerful force. I actually, when you sent me the Skype message and said, I'm ready when you are, because the time had gotten away from me, I was sitting at my desk trying to finish up an episode of the recently dropped S-Town podcast. Have you heard of this?
I saw that you posted about it the other day. I haven't heard it myself.
Oh, it's my newest addiction, and it is from the folks who created Serial and This American Life, and it's another similar, not necessarily true crime, but kind of small-town intrigue in rural Alabama. And it is so compelling. And I was listening to the latest episode in my car, and I got back to my office, and I didn't want to be done. So I plugged it in and sat here in my office, not doing anything, just listening to a podcast.
You're blowing me off to listen to a podcast.
I was. I'm outing myself for what I was doing when I was late for this call. But I think that... That it is such an interesting format. That, and I'm a podcast junkie. I think I'm what our mutual friend Tom Webster would call a power user. But you talk about all that new stuff. What is podcasting is kind of antiquated. It's audio only, but why is it so compelling to people?
I think it's the intimacy of having someone's voice literally in your ear. You know, they really feel as though they know you in a way that print can't accomplish. And video is difficult to consume in certain situations. You know, like sometimes people listen to podcasts at work. They wouldn't necessarily want everybody knowing that's what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
And or they're at the gym or they're in the car. Like podcast listenership in the car obviously is on the rise because it's become so much easier now. So I think that's a big part of it. It's just a combination. I mean, think about how you recognize somebody's voice the second they start talking to you on the phone. You know exactly who it is.
Well, that is interesting. And, you know, you talk about, in reading your bio, mentioned Matt Collier and blog chat and blogging. And that was really kind of the first form of content I really started creating en masse online. And I used to, it used to be that when I would meet new people at a conference or an event, that that they would say, oh yeah, I've read your blog. I've heard of your blog. Now I really hardly hear that, but it's been replaced with, I listen to your podcast. And I do think that I even feel kind of close based on that, because I feel like if you're listening to this, even if we're not actually talking, but if someone's listening to this, I feel like, you know, it is a little bit more personal.
And even if they hear you talking at an event, they'll be like, wait a second, I know that voice. And that's sometimes the reason that people come up and talk to me at events, because they recognize my voice, which is hilarious. I mean, certain places, I'm not like NPR, you know what I mean? But like at marketing events, obviously, it's going to be overrepresented for people who listen to marketing podcasts. So there's definitely something that feels very personal about it, which I think explains its lasting appeal, even though video is kind of everywhere now.
Well, and it also makes me wonder, because I feel like, you know, there's so many, you know, of certain types of podcasts, but as businesses, as brands think about what they might do with a podcast, you know, where would you recommend an organization starting?
Well, I think it's, for one thing, you could start with some conversational research, the kind of stuff that Jason Falls has been working on, but it's going through social data for either your audience or your ideal audience or whatever, to see what things interest them apart from like the specific reason they come to your website, like a product or service need or business need. So if you can find something else that they're into that you can speak intelligently about and that you enjoy, I really feel like you have to enjoy it, or find someone at your business who does to do the business podcast, because they're going to burn out otherwise. But if you can find a topic like that, it's not about your products and services, it's about the lifestyle of the people you're trying to serve, I think you can really succeed there from a business standpoint with your business goals, and at the same time, you know, fuel that kind of long-term relationship that every company is going to need to stay around.
Well, and I also think back to my own addiction, I think that conversational research is great. And I also think that listening to, I always say when asked a similar question, if you're thinking of getting into podcasting, become a podcast consumer, a diverse podcast consumer, even podcast content, and especially podcast content outside of your bubble, your echo chamber.
Oh, especially outside of your bubble. Yeah.
Cause I'm sitting here listening to that new S Town podcast, and the NPR folks just are not so surprisingly. I mean, I'm saying, can you believe it? And it's like, it shouldn't be that surprising that they are wonderful at producing audio content, because that's kind of what their brand is all about. But it, I think, really makes them own podcast production, and not just the technical side of production. I think the way that it enhances the storytelling in a way that I would love for more of the business podcasts out there to see. I think that we haven't had a lot of examples of folks really, really cracking into that as a format as well.
Yeah, that's the one example of times when you can rip off an idea. And I mean, there's like, I say it like it's a bad thing, right?
No.
But they haven't like copyrighted the idea of starting your podcast off with a 30-second snippet from the interview. You know, they didn't, obviously you can steal that idea, no sweat. And I have, for marketing smarts, that's what I do. I take 30 seconds, some interesting insight or just especially fun piece, and put it at the very beginning before you hear anything else, before you hear the bumper, before you hear me introducing the person. You just hear this 30 seconds of them talking, and it draws you in. And that's, I got it from NPR.
You know what you did there? You brought it full circle, podcasting back to legal copywriting things and all of the great things you can do. Well, Kerry, believe it or not, we are coming up on our half hour together.
Oh, no.
And as we wrap, I have to ask for a brand that has made you smile recently.
This one is so easy. Orvis, the outdoor brand, they're known for fly fishing gear and stuff like that. I just interviewed the person in charge of their brand, Simon Perkins, and it's a family business. It's like a 150-year-old brand, and I don't know what I expected, but it was far and away just so much more fun than I expected because I don't know much about fly fishing, and you know, and it was an older brand, and they started as like a direct response brand, so I was like, I don't know, we're going to go with this. It was so much fun and so interesting. And then after we talked, the guest, Simon, sent me like Orvis hats for my kids and a tote bag. And it was just like, it was the sweetest thing. It was like an old fashioned kind of gesture, but it sprang from a very modern, you know, type of interaction, like recording a podcast online. I thought that was so interesting. So that's probably a big part of why they're still around after so long, is because they successfully integrate like real life brand experiences and relationships with their online business.
Well, that is, I think, fascinating. And here we talk about podcasts, video, live content, all of the newest, latest, greatest things. And I think that sometimes, you know, we forget about those real world connections, those real life things. I mean, I think, you know, you think about even the phrase brand touch point comes from the fact that you can actually touch something. And I think having a tactile memento, I mean, especially one that you can pass on to your kids, because that kind of allows you to pay it forward even more still. But I think holding something from a brand in your hands is pretty amazing and not something that you can undercut.
Totally true, and very thoughtful selection, you know, something for my kids. So I'm going to remember that. And so that's kind of in the mental tumbler now with whatever else I might associate with the brand. It's changed my entire way of thinking about them. And it was so easy.
That is great. What a smilerific story.
You're so Midwestern.
Making up that word right here. In class, not in class, on the podcast. I'm talking to you too many places. There is
like
not
a
such a thing. It's like a class. It's like a class. If folks want the class to continue, where can they go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Well, if they'd like to hear the Marketing Smarts podcast, you can go to marketingprofs.com/podcasts. I can't take really full credit, you know, all the accolades the podcast gets. It's really all about the guests. I speak very little, much less than I did to you. I just try to kind of get out of the way and let the guests talk. But so you can learn more there about the podcast. More about me you can learn at carriegorgone.com. And I'm Carrie Gorgone on Twitter as well, and kind of everywhere, I guess. So.
Awesome.
So come and learn.
And because you have a great sign-off, I guess not sign-off, but we can use it as a sign-off today, when giving all of those coordinates to my students, you always point out that your last name, it's Carrie, or your first name, Carrie, last name, G, or Gone.
Yeah, so it's Carrie G, or Gone.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Carrie, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Thank you for having me, Nick.
And before we go, I want to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, Sean Carpenter gave us a shout on Twitter for our episode on authenticity and brands featuring Bruce Kennedy from Cision. And a reminder, if you like something that you heard on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes and Stitcher. Speaking of both, head over, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. And remember, On Brand is brought to you by my book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Order now at Amazon and check out GetScrappyBook.com for special offers and extras. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.